Now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is more than one way to look at something. Each of my guests is showing us that there's more than one way to view his or her subject. My next guest tells the unlikely story of green business revolution between H. Lee Scott, the former CEO of Walmart, and one of the least, which was one of the least earth-friendly corporations in the world, and the sustainability consultant Jib Ellison. What happens next is simply remarkable. We'll discuss his latest book, Force of Nature. Edward Humes is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author. His latest book, as I said, is Force of Nature, the unlikely story of Walmart's green revolution. Edward has other books, including the Penn Award-winning No Matter How Loud I Shout, A Year in the Life of the Juvenile Court, and the best-selling Mississippi Mud, and a title that I like very much, Monkey Girl, Evolution, Education, Religion, and the Battle for American Soul. Welcome to the show, Ed. How are you today?
Doing great, Bill. How about yourself?
Well, doing terrific. Thank you so much for being my guest. I love having on subject matter experts such as yourself. Well, let's dive right into it, because Walmart, I'm a shareholder in Walmart, and they've gone through a myriad of changes over the years. Some of the changes were due to lawsuits. Others were due to bad publicity. Environmental sustainability, though, initially started out as kind of an answer to all of the bad press. Tell us this story behind H. Lee Scott, who was then CEO of Walmart's drive towards sustainability.
Well, this goes back 7 years now to 2004, when the brand image of Walmart was really hurting, and they were actually thinking they were losing a substantial number of customers because of this evil empire reputation that they had earned. The thinking was that there was room to do something good on the environmental front that might help counter some of that negative publicity. So it was at this time that the CEO of Walmart, Lee Scott, took a meeting with a very unlikely partner for him named Jib Ellison, who's a river guide by trade for many years. These wild river trips and brought Soviets and Americans together on wild rivers during the Cold War, and had a whole history of using nature as a tool to bring people together. And he had brought that to the corporate world as a consultant. And so he visits with Lee Scott in 2004 and suggests that the company that thought itself was as very efficient and bottom line oriented was missing enormous opportunities by neglecting sustainability. And he made a pitch that if they were to embrace this business case for sustainability, that being green wasn't a cost or a burden, but was actually a way of being more prosperous and profitable while also helping the planet, he basically laid down a challenge from the river guy to the CEO and said, let me prove this to you, and you'll never go back if you try it. And so they basically turned Walmart into a giant laboratory for testing the business case for sustainability, and they've been going at it for 7 years now.
Well, my guest is Ed Humes, and Ed, one of the more fascinating aspects to this story is how Jib Ellison decided that he was going to pitch Walmart. Walmart is notorious for putting its vendors at arm's length, making them come to Bentonville, which is where they're headquartered, and making their pitch. Why is it that Ellison even decided that he, as an individual, as a river guide, could be the one to lead them into sustainability?
Well, he had proposed to his partners in his business consultancy in San Francisco that they shift their business to emphasizing green and sustainability. And in 2004, that wasn't a particularly popular notion. And his partner said, we're doing fine what we're doing. Let's just stay as a standard business leadership consultancy kind of operation. So he struck out on his own, and he used his contacts in the environmental world, specifically through Conservation International, a big wildlife and habitat conservation group that works with very wealthy people to get their donations. And in fact, the head of Conservation International was working with the son of the founder of Walmart as in a philanthropic way. And Jib's pitch was, look, it's great that these rich guys are doing philanthropy for the environment, but what they could really be doing is turning their company in the direction of helping the environment. And that's where big change would happen fast. And So he used his contact to get that meeting. And they call him the CEO Whisperer now because he has a way of framing these ideas that most people in the environmental field just don't do. He speaks the language of CEOs, but his goals are very much green, and that he pulled it off where others had failed in the past.
I'm talking to Ed Humes, author of the book Forces of Nature, The Unlikely Story of Walmart's Green Revolution. And you alluded to it before. Now, Jib is known as the CEO Whisperer. There are some people who say that actually Ellison outsmarted or outmaneuvered Scott. You know, if Walmart was a country, it would be the world's 20th largest country because of the population of employees that it has, the size of its GDP, and all of that kind of good stuff. Did Ellison outsmart Scott, or was it a case of both men deciding that this was mutually beneficial?
Oh, it was the latter. I mean, initially, the motivation was branding and PR and sort of playing defense for a company that was suffering from a bad image. But Ellison was right. They quickly proved that being sustainable would have enormous returns through reducing packaging and fuel efficiency and energy efficiency. The company was boosting its profits by millions and then hundreds of millions in fairly short order by doing some real common sense but significant changes to make themselves somewhat greener. And at that point, Lee Scott got it, and the entire leadership of the company got it, that this was a new way of looking at environmentalism that made sense for the business, and there was no trickery involved or outsmarting it, because they've been talking about this ever since. Even in the tough economic times that we're experiencing now, they say sustainability is even more important now because it makes us more profitable, it makes us leaner and meaner, and you know, it didn't. Walmart has embraced this. Doesn't make them a green company, but it has made them a greener company.
Without a doubt. Well, let's talk about the bad boy image that Walmart had at the time that this was all taking place, back in 2004. Just some of the violations and things that were getting them into hot water. They had a federal minimum wage and overtime violations. They were charged with discrimination, both age discrimination and sex discrimination. There was no health care for the full-time employees. Workers, in some cases, were locked up overnight in the stores, unable to leave for emergencies. Foreign-made goods were labeled as made in America. They had foreign suppliers that were running sweatshops, and they used illegal nighttime custodial contractors to come in and actually clean the store. So there was definitely a bad boy image there that Walmart had to overcome, and they did by moving towards this sustainability. Let's talk about some of the ways in which Walmart's moves into waste reduction and other environmental initiatives really helped their stores. You alluded to some of them, but let's talk about some of the impact that it had on their facilities, their stores, their operations, and their supply chain, if we can, Ed.
Sure. Well, it runs the gamut, because when you start asking the question, how can we be more sustainable? What can we do to lower our footprint on the world, our impact on the world, in a way that makes sense for the business? You ask a whole different set of questions, and you begin to look at your products. Well, can we shrink the packaging on this product? Can we make laundry detergent bottles smaller? Can we introduce greener products and lower the prices? Compact fluorescent bulbs being an example. Can we lower the energy costs and therefore the carbon emissions of our stores? They did that by 20% to 30%. With, you know, some of it is so staring you in the face, common sense that you know, you immediately start wondering why you didn't do this before, like putting in skylights and using daylight while your stores are open instead of artificial lighting, or putting auxiliary power units on your 7,000 tractor trailer so you don't have to have the main engines idling all the time, whether you're moving or not. Using streamlining on your trucks, installing equipment that pays for itself almost immediately because of the savings that you get, and of course you're lowering your environmental footprint at the same time.
Yeah.
Walmart's biggest footprint is from its supply chain, from the companies that make the products they sell. And so they have asked their suppliers to join this effort. And at first, it seemed like it was yet another way of burdening their suppliers and raising their costs. But it turned out that a lot of these initiatives were scalable. It makes sense for a little company making underwear in Georgia to become more energy efficient and therefore cut their energy bills and emissions as much as it makes sense for Walmart. And so this idea of the business case for sustainability gained traction because, you know, it's 100,000 companies that supply to Walmart at any one time all over the world. And you have factories in China now. They've done over 100 so far that have lowered their energy and carbon by as much as 30% through these kinds of efficiency measures. So it's become a real force that's taken on a life of its own in a very unexpected way.
It absolutely is a force of nature. I'm speaking to Ed Humes, who's the author of the book Force of Nature: The Unlikely Story of Walmart's Green Business Revolution. And just to emphasize this in some dollars and cents, the story that I like best is about the truck fleet, Ed. And I'm going to say that Walmart reduced its fuel usage of its 7,000 tractor-trailer rigs by 8%. Simply by adding battery-operated air conditioning unit to each truck, so they didn't have to run the engine to keep the cabin cool.
Exactly.
And the savings to the company, that 8% change, the savings to the company resulted in $25 million a year in fuel costs. That's based on 2004 fuel prices. So and it also stopped adding 100,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions to the air each year. So it made financial sense. It obviously made ecological sense as well. And for my listeners, describe for us, if you will, the distinction between what is an ecologist and how that differs from a conservationist.
Well, you know, there's a lot of overlap there. But a conservationist could be anyone. Who is engaged in preserving a natural area. And conservation can be achieved through all sorts of ways. And an ecologist is more of a scientific discipline that in which you study the balance between the natural systems and how they are interdependent.
Okay, that
makes sense. I'm not sure how that fits into this, but you're really testing my knowledge base.
Hey, I just want to make sure that you're the subject matter expert, that I know that you are, Ed, so that's great. Super. Now, let me ask you this, because reading your book, Forces of Nature, clearly it was an interesting story about Walmart, but what lessons can other companies learn from Walmart's conservation efforts?
Well, it's larger than conservation because you have energy efficiency, you have carbon emissions lowering, you have an increased reliance on local agriculture in their stores. You know, if you go into a Walmart store, they now have these areas that look, you know, you have to blink because it looks like Whole Foods or something. They're selling actually local, become a new outlet for local produce, which is, of course, not only supports small and medium-sized farms in the areas where Walmart has stores, but is also lowering that transportation factor for our food, which, you know, people like Michael Pollan have been preaching for years. If we can lower the food miles, it's one of the best things we can do for the environment. So these environmental initiatives are pretty broad-based at Walmart, and they have driven other big companies, even their competitors, in the same direction, so that now, you know, Walmart had its catalyst, this river guide, and now it has become a catalyst for whole industries, for dairy, for the apparel industry, and for the big box retail economy in general. You know, there's a reason why we now buy smaller bottles of detergent for our wash, by and large, because that was a Walmart initiative, but it was embraced industry-wide in fairly short order because it makes such economic sense to do things like that, and environmental sense as well.
Without a doubt. Now, CEO of Walmart at the time, H. Lee Scott, was the driving force behind this. Can you really have sustainability efforts, conservation efforts, without having the initiative start at the top of a corporation?
No, you really have to have that initial buy-in. One of the mistakes that a lot of companies make is that they have these sort of separate sustainability operations that have no real power within the company. And for real progress to be made, it has to, it can't be foisted off on an underling. It has to be someone who has the sort of higher firepower. But then it also has to be baked into the actual operations of the company and not separate, some separate sustainability wing. So it starts at the top, but it also has to filter down through the hierarchy of a company, whatever its size is, so that you have it built into the business at every level. Otherwise, it just doesn't work, and a lot of the efforts in the past have failed. So that was one of the things that the River Guide preached from the very start, that it has to start from the top, but it also has to be baked into the business.
Valuable lessons. My guest is Edward Humes. He's the author of the book Forces of Nature, The Unlikely Story of Walmart's Green Revolution. And Ed, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Force of Nature?
Well, I think that two things. One is that in this time of very difficult environmental challenges, really some very negative rhetoric about it, about all things green emanating from Washington, that you have this unexpected voice, a very red state company like Walmart, embracing their inner Al Gore and saying, it's not crazy talk to be greener. In fact, it's good for the economy. It's good for business. It's not a job killer. It's a job maker. That's how Walmart sees it. And I think you take your allies where you can find them. And if that's one of the voices that is now speaking in favor of green, if that's something I care about, I'm going to take that message seriously and try and see where that can take us.
Embracing their inner Al Gore. I love it. My guest has been Ed Humes, author of the book Force of Nature. Ed, if people like what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
I would direct them to my website, edwardhumes.com, and or my Twitter feed, which is Edward Humes, and let's start a conversation about this.
Oh, that is great. Ed, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds great, Bill. Thank you.
Thanks.